This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. The Ebola outbreak that began in West Africa early last year killed more than 5,000 people, making it the worst outbreak of the virus in history, according to the World Health Organization. And for the first time ever, the U.S. had to confront the disease here at home. While the U.S. news is no longer filled with stories about Ebola, and no cases have been reported here this year, Ebola is still a very real threat in West Africa. Dr. Chidi Jaja, associate professor at the University of Cincinnati College of Nursing, recently returned from his native Sierra Leone, his second trip this year to the country to treat Ebola patients, and he joins us to talk about his experiences and the continued threat the disease poses. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Chidi, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
It's a pleasure to be here, Mark.
Chidi, what's the situation with Ebola right now? Are things under control in West Africa?
It's slightly better than what it was at the beginning of the year, because when I went to Sierra Leone for the first time, the country was recording cases about up to 500 new cases a week. And just sitting outside listening to the news roundup, it was reported today there's only 4 new cases that were reported. So, I mean, that's a big improvement, you know, from 500 to 4 new cases. And this came after the country had gone for like almost 5 days without any new cases. So it's much improved, but there's still work to be done.
So it's not time to let down our guard yet.
Oh, not at all.
How much of a threat does Ebola remain at this point?
Well, at this point in time, the biggest threat is complacency. Okay, because Ebola is now part of the landscape of Sierra Leone. Okay, as has been the history of Ebola in countries where it had occurred before, continue to experience isolated cases, and Sierra Leone, you know, will definitely experience, you know, cases of Ebola. So what is needed, you know, is a heightened state of alertness, you know, and a move by the international community to help the government strengthen the health infrastructure to make sure that the country is ready and prepared, you know, for any incidents, you know, or cases of Ebola.
So this should be a global issue.
It's definitely a global issue. That's my belief.
Okay. And how did you become involved with treating Ebola patients?
Well, interesting question. If you recall, toward the latter part of last year, every American saw on TV images of Ebola victims, you know, and some of the very gruesome images. I said to myself, you know, that I got to do something, you know. I didn't know what to do, you know, but I just know deep down that, you know, I have to be part of the effort, you know, to bring this epidemic under control. So it's interesting because at University of Cincinnati, we had it was a panel discussion, you know, to educate the campus community about Ebola, you know, and what we in the U.S. can do, or specifically what, you know, the folks at the university campus, you know, could do about, you know, this epidemic. And the tenor, I mean, to put it mildly, you know, the focus was simply on, well, what can we do here in, you know, in Cincinnati? There was never any discussion, well, what can we do for those folks, you know, in West Africa? So I just know that I had to do something, you know. So I called up Partners in Health. This is an NGO in Boston, and ask, you know, if they're willing, you know, to help me become part of their effort in Sierra Leone. And they said yes.
We need help.
Yes.
All the help we can get.
Yes. And they were ecstatic because, you know, I was born in Sierra Leone. You know, I mean, I've lived in the state for over 27 years, you know, but Sierra Leone is still my country, you know, so they were willing to have somebody who has knowledge, you know, of the environment, you know, the country and the culture. So I was a tremendous asset, you know, to Partners in Health.
What did your family think of your decision to go?
Interesting question. Okay. Well, everybody was apprehensive. Okay. Everybody was apprehensive. And part of it has to do with the fact that, I mean, this is something new. We didn't know much about, you know, about Ebola. And all we saw on TV were just gruesome images, you know, and the hysteria, you know, around Ebola, you know. But I did my homework, you know. I, I attended a workshop that the CDC organized for folks who wanted to serve in West Africa. It was a three-day workshop in Alabama. I did all my homework, you know, I read, I asked questions, I called people up, you know, and so I was well informed. So when I, you know, mentioned this to my family and they saw how determined I was, you know, they said, okay. I mean, I had to go, you know.
You were originally thinking that you're going to spend a lot of your time working on health policy, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And,
yes.
And yet you ended up doing clinical work when you were in Sierra Leone. How did it come about?
Well, okay. So, we got to Freetown, I think it was December 20th, just 5 days before Christmas. And we had to go through a bunch of training, you know, and since my background, one of my background is in health policy, and I thought I'll be involved, maybe just doing, you know, routine office work, organizing relief effort around logistics, those kinds of things. But I said, no, we need boots on the ground, you know, so you have to go, you know. And I said, yes, you know, and it was one of the best experience in my life. It was really a life-changing experience, you know. And I'm glad, you know, I was able to serve. I was glad I was able to interact with folks, you know, with the disease, some who died and some who made it through.
So you're talking about preparation and training. What was the preparation and training like for making these trips?
Okay, so starting here in the U.S., you know, the CDC organized a workshop. It's a three-day workshop down in Anniston, Alabama, you know, for every volunteer who wants to serve in both in Sierra Leone, Liberia, or Guinea, three countries that are affected. And the training revolves around the epidemiology of Ebola, infection control, psychological first aid, and just written clear care, how you care for an Ebola patient at the various stages of the disease. But the emphasis was on infection control, because what's interesting about Ebola is, unlike any other disease, that with Ebola, the caregiver safety is paramount. You're not used to the patient, you know, if you contact the disease. So the emphasis on how to make yourself safe, you know, while you interact, you know, with the patient. So we had a three-day workshop in Anniston, Alabama, and then I flew to Boston and joined my cohort of 14 clinicians from all over the country. And then we had another three-day training in Boston and flew to Sierra Leone. In Sierra Leone, we had to go through another 3 day of WHO training. Okay. And it was mainly a repetition of what we did in Anniston, Alabama. But for the first time, we were able to don our PPE, personal
protective suit.
And then, you know, you do a lot of simulation where you walk through, you know, a makeshift Ebola hospital with volunteer. But what was interesting about the volunteers was that these are folks who had survived Ebola. So the simulation was excellent. It was very realistic, you know.
Yeah, people with firsthand experience.
Yes, folks who had actually survived the disease, we are the patient.
What's it like to put that suit on and take that suit off? I mean, what's that whole process like? It has to be pretty complicated.
It is very cumbersome, yeah, you know, because there are so many different pieces that you have to put together. Okay, so first you have to grab your boots, you know, and I use 3 pairs of gloves. Some of my colleagues would use 4 pairs of gloves. And then you have your N95 face mask, your apron, your face shield, okay. But it takes at a minimum 15 minutes to put all the pieces together, okay, because it's a very meticulous process, and you have to be observed by a body, you know, you dress with a body, you go in with a body, so you have to be observed by a body. And once you have, you know, all the pieces together, you have to do a check whereby your body makes sure that you have all the pieces together, and then you write your name on in front of the suit, what your role is. You might be a doctor, a nurse, hygienist, you know, removal team member, and then the time that you're about to go in. And you're always going in pairs. You always have somebody with you. You cannot go into the hot zone alone. You always have to go with somebody.
What was it like the first time you went to that hot zone?
Oh my God, that's something I would never forget, you know, in my lifetime. Yeah,
where you had your first encounter with a patient.
Yes,
right?
Yeah. Yes. So this was what is called the hot zone training. So you've gone through all this the simulation, and then for the first time, you have to go into the ETU, the Ebola Treatment Unit, and you go with an experienced clinician. So this time I went with a doctor, an infectious control doctor. And basically, we're just going to like walk through, you know, he's going to like show me, you know, where the medications are in the ward, you know, where I was out, patients are separated. Okay. And we got into this ward, and the first thing I saw on the concrete floor was a woman. She was about 28, 29 years old, still lying on the floor, okay, half naked. And she was dead. Dead. Mm. And I touched her, just to make sure she, to see if she has a pulse. No pulse. Okay. And I'm saying to myself, God, how did I get in here? You know, how did I get in here? And on the other hand, I'm saying, well, it's too late now to back out, you know. But then that just happened for, you know, for a fleet second. And then your clinician training just kicked in. And all you want to do is, okay, well, she's dead. You know, cover up, spray her with chlorine, which was the procedure. And then you move on to the next patient. Okay. But like I said, you know, that encounter will remain with me, you know, for the rest of my life. And then that just became the routine. You know, people die in the hospital every day, you know, and it just become part of, you know, what you have to do, what you have to experience.
What about successes, though? That had to make you feel really good when you had a success, a patient was discharged. And what was that whole process they went through when they were discharged?
Okay, that's, you know, that's the, I mean, that's
what... That was the good part of what
you did.
That's
the good
part,
definitely. Yeah. That's the good part, you know. So each time, you know, a patient is tested, you know, and, well, a patient who was positive and then got better, you know, and now test negative for Ebola, we have to test them twice to make sure that they're fully recovered and they're negative. When that's the case, they get discharged, but the discharge process itself is very elaborate. They have to take a happy shower, okay? Yes, so they have to take a happy shower. Happy shower, yes, sir. They have to take a happy shower. And then everything that they brought into the ETU, they have to leave behind. You know, all personal belongings, they have to leave behind. And that will be incinerated. But then we have to give them new clothes. And then we have a ceremony, you know, where they're presented with a certificate indicating that they're now free of Ebola, and then they're singing and dancing, and then, you know, a speech, you know, somebody will give a speech, you know. But the good part is that these individuals who survive Ebola get to go home with goodies. Okay, the WHO had like a goodie bag for them that includes a bag of rice, cooking utensils, oil, money, you know, and a mattress, clothes, you know. So they go home back with something, you know. And I get to sign a lot of the certificate that says that this patient is now free of Ebola. And that for me was the highlight of what I did on a daily basis.
Quite a contrast to that first experience.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. You know, with all the stories about health workers that who contracted Ebola, were you concerned about your own well-being while you were there?
Oh, yes. I was terrified. I mean, first round, you know, like I said earlier, you know, once I got into the health zone, I started having doubt, you know, gosh, you know, why did I sign up? I'm no hero. You know, why did I do this? You know, but you look around, you know, the ETU, and you see, you know, an 8-month-old kid, you know, you see, you know, a 5-year-old kid, you know, and all you just feel is compassion, you know, you just want, you know, to help. You forget about your own personal, well, your personal safety is important, but the compassion comes out, you know, and that's, you just want to make these people get better, you know. So when I have a patient who dies, you know, for me, well, not only for me, but I think, you know, all the staff, you know, take that very personal that we didn't do a job, you know. Even when some of the patients come in, you know, I mean, in very beat up, in very poor state, you know, we want everybody who come to the ETU to survive, but that was not the case, you know. So those who survive made for very happy moments.
And then a lot of these people, didn't they have, they faced multiple health issues? It wasn't just, it wasn't just Ebola. They had other things going on as well.
Oh, yes. For the kids, it was mainly malnutrition. You know, it was malnutrition. And then, for the adults, they usually have other type of infection, usually malaria. So everybody will get admitted, into the ETU after going through triage, get tested not only for Ebola, but also for malaria as well. And then our protocol include treating, every patient for malaria and Ebola.
Now, in the U.S., we really knew very little about Ebola, and still know very little about Ebola until it started hitting the news last year.
Right.
Are there still a lot of misperceptions about the virus? What are the main things that people still get wrong about this disease, do you think?
Well, I'll give you another personal example. So I flew in into Chicago O'Hare Airport, you know, after my second tour in Sierra Leone. And, of course, I was flagged by the system, you know, and I present in front of this immigration officer, you know, and he said, where have you been? I said, well, I've been to the UK, I've been to Sierra Leone. And then the guy, you could just sense his body language, like backing, you know, and then, you know, he's looking for his hand sanitizer.
You know, so like,
I said, you know, I don't have Ebola, you know. I wanted to say, you know, that's stupid, you know, but I did not, you know, so. But so it's, I mean, I think there's more that needs to be done, you know. It's a disease like any other type of disease, you know, and it can be treated, you know. And I don't think we need to bring up, you know, the barriers or build up walls, you know, just because some part of the world has Ebola. We need to see, as I mentioned earlier, we need to see this, you know, as a global problem, you know, because Ebola is going to happen again, if not in other parts of, you know, of the world, you know, so. We need a global effort to educate, you know, the public, you know, that it's just a disease that with right treatment, right resources, it can be, you know, you could have good outcomes.
If someone's had Ebola, are they now immune from it, or can they get it again?
Well, that's my understanding, you know, that once you've contacted Ebola and you survive, you have immunity. Okay, but we also know that that the virus, you know, tend to remain in the individual's bodily fluid for a period of time. Earlier, we thought it would remain like in the blood for 3 months, you know. But we've had cases, you know. Well, I've read, you know, a report, you know, where, you know, the bodily fluid can stay much longer than that.
Okay. Chidi, what were some of the, who are the, some of the other clinicians you worked with? These were people from all over the world, weren't they?
Yes, well, so the effort in Sierra Leone was global in any sense of the word. So I worked alongside Cuban doctors and nurses. I worked with doctors from Nigeria, from Liberia, from the Ethiopia. Okay. And I even encounter, you know, a health worker from Israel. So, yeah. Yes.
And well, how much of an impact do you think that you and the others had on the lives of your patients?
That's a very interesting question, because it's a question that I still agonize over. Okay. Because when we started working at the ETU, we're mainly providing palliative care, at least for the first week and a half, you know, and then we started a more rigorous regimen that will include IV fluid for every patient that is admitted, and antimalarial, antidiarrheal, and multivitamins, you know, just to help, you know, boost the patient immune system. But we still lost a lot of patients, and so I agonize in terms of where are we actually providing palliative care, or are we just, you know, providing, you know, good clinical care? And part of the reason why I say this is because the course of Ebola is so uneven. You will have a patient come in, and that patient looks so beat up, you think they're going to kill over the next day, they're going to, you know, and die. And they will just linger on. Before you know it, 6 days have gone by. They're still hanging on, and they get better. You know? And then you have a patient that looks very healthy. You know, you wonder, well, this person doesn't have Ebola, because I mean, they're very lucid. You know, I mean, they walk around without any help. You know, and 6 hours later, they're dead. You know, they die. And I saw that so many times. Mm. You know, so the treatment, even though we're providing care, I don't know if that's what make them better, you know. So I agonize whether it's just your immune system over time just kicking in, you know.
But, or whether you really had an impact.
Right, oh. Right. So the way that I, you know, I've come to terms with myself is the individuals who got better, as well as the individuals who died, I can say that I was with them through the journey. You know, that's how I, you know, That's all I can say. You know, I was with them, you know, through that journey. Okay. So in a roundabout way, I would say yes, I made some impact, some difference.
Has this changed your personal view of life?
In a way, yes. Okay. Life is very precious, you know, and what I want to do now, you know, is to see, you know, how I can use my talent, you know, and capabilities, you know, to touch other people, especially less, you know, fortunate people, you know, to just show them, you know, that someone cares or somebody is thinking about you. And that is reflected in the project that I'm currently involved in Sierra Leone.
Tell us some more about that.
Well, okay. So, right now I'm involved with, we have established an orphanage for, kids who have lost, either one or both parents, you know, from Ebola. So we rented a building. We've, hired staff to take care of 23 kids. This age range from 8 years old to 16 years old. And we devoted, you know, we made the decision to provide for these kids, you know, their well-being, their feeding, school-related expenses, psychosocial support up to the age of 18. And it's a major undertaking, but it's something that I derive, you know, tremendous pleasure, you know. I just feel like I'm doing something, you know, so even though I'm cognizant that it's a tremendous undertaking, you know, it's something that brings a smile to my face each time I think about it.
It brings a smile to my face.
Oh, well, thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Okay. It's a pleasure.
Dr. Chidi Jaja, Associate Professor at the University of Cincinnati College of Nursing. He's just returned from his second trip to Sierra Leone, where he was helping to treat patients with Ebola. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Today's show was produced by Pete Reitmeier with help from Kevin Reynolds. The technical director was Rick Andres. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU.